In New York. If District Attorney Clegg would like to do a presentation, I'll turn it over to him for a few minutes.
Okay, well, thank you. It's nice to see you all virtually. I'm glad to see you can smile and have some fun together. So the reason that we've made this request for a resolution is that we have a burden that's been imposed on us by the new discovery laws that are impacting my office to an extreme degree right now. And I'll go over all the details of that, but I'd like to start off by asking one of my experienced ADAs to tell you how this has affected her legal practice here at the Ulster County DA's office. So Liz Camoni-Mills, would you please speak?
Yes, good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak to everybody here today. I have been with the Ulster County District Attorney's Office going into my 15th year. For the past 15 years, I have prosecuted cases of domestic violence. And I do want to talk to you, I will be brief, but I do want to talk to you how the discovery laws have impacted what we are able to do here at the District Attorney's Office, and specifically with respect to a very serious public safety issue that it's causing. We are extremely desperate at the DA's office. We are understaffed, and we are in a position where public safety is at risk, and I want to take you into that for a moment. As you all know, the most serious and violent cases for police officers, the greatest risk cases for them to respond to, are domestic violence cases. And sometimes there are 3, 4, 5 officers who respond to a call for service. Sometimes it's the entire shift that responds to the call for service. And sometimes those call for service appropriately take 1 to 2 hours to resolve. That means for each officer that responds to that call for service, we have 1 to 2 hours of body camera video and patrol car video that we have to go through. And quite often with domestic violence cases, victims are not cooperative. Victims may not have even been the one who called the police. They're reluctant to cooperate when the police are questioning them. And even if they did call, they're reluctant to tell the police exactly what happened because it puts them in a really dangerous situation with their abuser. And so what happens is every time I get a case, and since March of 2020, I have been assigned 103 cases. And every single case, I have to go through every single body camera video, patrol car video, so that I can ensure that I am protecting the victims in this community. I review that video so that I'm able to tell a victim what he or she had said to keep them safe from their abuser. Many times it's a really vulnerable time when they're responding, when they're telling the police officers what happened in a particular case. It's an extremely vulnerable time for them. And sometimes we're reviewing to ensure that we can apply for a protective order. And other times we're reviewing the body camera video because I want to ensure that I'm able to tell this victim what in fact they did say, so that when that information gets turned over to their abuser, they are prepared for that. I feel at this point that we are not serving the community in the way in which each of you are expecting us to serve the community. I took a personal oath 15 years ago to serve the victims of Ulster County. And because of the burden that's being put on us without the proper staffing, it's not the burden, it's the staffing to help us support doing it. I do not feel like I am able to provide the service to the victims in this community that I swore I would do 15 years ago. I apologize for getting emotional, but this is not something to apologize for, because we are all committed to this community and committed to serving the public. And because of how understaffed we are at this point, and because of the discovery obligations that we have, we are not able to do that, and we're not able to serve our community. I'm not going to take any more of your time, but I want to thank you for listening to us and to hearing what it's like for us on a daily basis.
Thank you, Liz.
So we have a PowerPoint presentation I'd like to show you, and we'll discuss what these issues are. Go ahead.
You have to share the screen.
Yeah. Go ahead. I don't know how to do it.
You should be able to do that.
You can do it? Okay.
So the impact of discovery reform on our office. The April 1st, 2019 legislation that was a sweeping reform for discovery has affected our office in a way that there are unintended consequences. Now, what the discovery law did was it required automatic discovery, accelerated timeline response, and a flow of information of every item in every case, including misdemeanors and felonies. So as we talked about, we've had something in the area of 4,500 cases in the last year and a half. In every single case now, discovery requires us within a timeline of 20 days or 30 days, depending on the complexity of the case, to make sure that we've responded to all of the discovery demands in each case. But what that has done is put the burden on our office and our ADAs to try and respond to this discovery in a very time-pressured situation, which makes us puts us in a position where the workload that we have, along with the importance of the cases we're handling, makes it three times more difficult than ever was before. Right now, because of the COVID pandemic that we had a court closure for 6 months. We have limited grand jury time. We have backlogs in cases that have doubled and tripled the caseloads of each ADA in my office. And what that means is not only do they have more cases than ever before, but they have more work in every case that they have. Now, the way to respond to this and what we need desperately to make this function is additional staffing to cover the discovery requirements that we have in a speedy fashion, in a competent fashion, with the support staff that we're requesting. We are modeling this discovery unit after what's going on in Dutchess County. And so that in Dutchess County, they have a unit where they requested six ADAs and they got three ADAs and they have four support staff. And what they do is that unit starts to address discovery in a very immediate fashion. So as I said, within a 20-day limitation, you have to get discovery going right away. And that requires coordination with each law enforcement agency in this county, which we've been doing to the best of our ability, and then getting the information, which includes body cams and car cams and surveillance cameras and phone information and highly digitalized information that makes this discovery so much more complex than it ever was before. So the combination of all the additional information that needs to be discovered, every body cam, as Liz was saying, you can have 3, 4, and as many as 60, depending on the complexity of the case, law enforcement officers arriving at a scene of a crime. In a very serious crime, as I said, it could be as many as 50 or 60 officers involved. The amount of time that takes is incredible. And if you lay it all on our ADAs who have to also do the motion work and the trial work and the arraignments and all the work that goes into prosecuting cases, it puts a stress on us. What I will tell you is that right now we have actually indicted 4 murder second cases within the last 6 months. Each murder case is probably 20 times the amount of effort, discovery, and time that a normal case takes. That, along with the backlog and the extreme highly complex caseload that each of my ADAs has put us in a position that in order to make sure that we can do our job, we need this extra support. So just going over this, 21 different categories of discoverable material. If we get this unit, we can get those categories discovered very quickly and move that on. We have to deal with 14 different local law enforcement agencies. We need an investigator who is competent to work with every law enforcement agency in the county, make sure that some of them have the ability to do this and some of them need a little support. My office is in a position to do that, and that would be part of what the unit would do. We need digital files, and video files have become immense in the world that we're in right now. We need somebody with competency to deal with videos, and we are actually in a position where we can expedite the discovery if we have somebody who can manage that. We also have to sometimes redact these videos. We have to redact evidence. So somebody who is competent in that area is very important. We have a record management need. We are digitalizing all the files in this office using the prosecutor's case management system. That has been put in place over the last year and a half, but we need a record management person to be on top of that as each case comes in. Right now, we're getting somewhere between 70 and 100 cases every single week. To get the information involved in our digital management system immediately will accelerate our ability to respond to all of these discovery demands. We also need an administrative assistance in order to facilitate all the work that needs to be done, along with a discovery ADA. Now, as Liz was saying, when we get these cases, one of the more concerning aspects of it is that we have to go through all this evidence at a very fast pace. And in order to do that, we have to make sure that we protect witnesses, we protect confidential informants, and we protect victims. And to do that, we have to review it and identify it, and then I make protective orders to protect that information. So all of that takes work right up front, and it's, as I say, it's another part of the responsibility that we have to make sure that we protect the public in every way, shape, and form. So right now, I'll open it up to questions if anybody has a question.
Anybody have any questions?
You want to come out of the sharing?
All right, seeing none, thank you. And thank your staff for the presentation.
I have one more ADA who would like to speak to this, if that's all right.
Sure.
All right. So Paul, would you speak, please?
Yes, can everybody hear me and see me okay?
Yeah.
Awesome. So my name is Paul Deronessian. Nice to meet everybody. I've been a prosecutor here in the office for 8.5 years. Having been here this long, I've been able to see the demands that are pre-January 1st, 2020 with the discovery laws and the change in the discovery laws. And I can compare what's required with these new laws and how it's changed our workload. And by my estimation, I would say each case we prosecute now, our workload has doubled in order to successfully comply with the discovery demands. There are whether we're putting a case in grand jury or if we're having a defendant that's going to plead guilty, getting everything together and filing a certificate of compliance so that we can go into court and take a guilty plea has led to an increased workload by all of us. The certificate of compliance is important because what we are having to do is we have to file under penalty of perjury that we have done our due diligence, that we have looked at all the information, that everything is there, we aren't missing anything, and we're filing an affirmation that we're not missing anything. And by doing under penalties of perjury, everybody here in this office takes it seriously. This is our law license that we're protecting by affirming this. And our concern is that if we're missing anything, that we're not complying with the law, and it's a big burden for all of us to have to do this in every single case. With COVID, our workloads in and of itself for having to prosecute each case with the new laws is one thing. I can give you an example. My caseload, I'm carrying close to 150 felonies right now. In the past, I've only carried 40 to 50 along with my misdemeanor justice courts. So I'm having triple the number of felonies I'm prosecuting. And for each one of those, I'm doing double the amount of work in order to make sure that I'm complying with the laws and that I'm filing a sufficient certificate of compliance that is not going to be invalid, that is not falsely signed by myself, and doing everything I can to comply with the laws. By having to go through all this discovery, again, the police have been great. They're using tons of resources to get us everything, whether it's video, radio transmission, handwritten notes, but we still have to review that to make sure that nothing's missing. And on top of that, if there's on a drug case, for example, something that needs a protective order, we have to make sure we've reviewed it. We know that there's something that has to be filed with the court and that it's not as simple as just hitting, checking off all the boxes, turning everything over and saying you've done your job. You really have to review it. You have to see if there's anything missing, if there's anything that needs to be protected. And all this takes time on top of the heavy caseloads that everybody in this office has been carrying. By not complying with the discovery laws, it's one thing for us to, you know, file under penalty of perjury that we are complying and turning everything over, but there's consequences when we go into court. If during a trial it comes out that we've missed something, there can be sanctions as drastic as dismissal, but just as bad that we can be precluded of having a witness testify to something, that there's certain evidence that might come out. And it will it'll have drastic consequences on everything in the justice system. We have many victims. We have many cases that have victims attached to them, and we want to make sure that there's justice done, and that both defendants have an open book and have access to all our files, and that victims can know that we're doing everything that we can to see the case through and successfully prosecute it. But the burdens that have taken place post January 1st, 2020. Have been felt by all of us in the office. I've been coming in on weekends. I've been staying late past 5 o'clock to make sure that on the more serious cases that I have that I'm not missing anything and I'm complying. So I just hope that this paints a picture for the immediate need we have for another bureau that can just focus on discovery, take that one less thing off of my load so that I know when I'm getting a case, everything's there. Everything's ready for me to sign a certificate of compliance and that I can give my everything and see that the goals of the criminal justice system are being achieved.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Well, nothing else. Thank you again for the presentation, and we're going to go on to our regular agenda.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Chair Don.
May I say something?
Right, Chair. Chair Don, go ahead.
Okay, there you are, John. Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to thank Elizabeth and Paul for coming today and their service and their commitment to their positions that they hold. And I've gone through this information over the past 2 weeks that was supplied to me by the DA, and this is a clear safety issue that we have. And it's definitely a criminal justice problem that we're being presented here. And so I would hope that we can support the DA and let's make sure that our streets are safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if I might just point out that there is a grant that we received from the New York State that we hope is going to be received in the very near future. This county was granted $768,733 toward meeting the obligations of both the discovery requirements and bail reform. This office made a request of $425,000 toward that, which I trust the county will be receiving. So there is money to support this, and I've talked with both the Manhattan District Attorney's Office that provided the original $38 million that's been distributed to the Upstate District Attorney's Office in order to meet those obligations. And there is money coming for next year. We don't know exactly how much it will be. And I've also just this week spoken with our Senator Michelle Hinchey and requested that the state provide an ongoing source of support for these costs in the future. Hopefully that will happen. So thank you all again.
Thank you. All right. Can I have approval of the minutes from the May 11th, May 18th regular meetings?
I'm moving.
Second.
Second.
Second, sure. Mr. Gronk. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Resolution 238, adopting revised Ulster County funding fund balance policy. Motion?
I'll move it. Bartels.
I'll second it, Gronk.
Gronk, discussion? Legislator Gronk?
Thanks. Is Legislator Archer here?
Yeah.
It was my understanding in the conversation I was having with Vicky earlier that there may be some movement on the numbers. I just didn't know if we wanted to have that discussion now.
Yeah. From what I gathered when I saw the edits to the policy, I think the 16 cap that you had recommended, I believe, at our last meeting and conversation that we had, I'm willing to move on that as the cap. I know you had originally, I guess, put in 5%, which, you know, the range has been 5 to 10 since 2013. I would hope that we could increase the bottom of that by a couple percentage points, if not the full movement, at least bring it up to 8, and so that the range would then be 8 to 16 based on a conversation we had at the at the last meeting.
Can I ask Mr. Chairman, through you to the finance director, if he would be comfortable with the number?
8% has been the average over the last few years. My only concern is when it's depleted. I know the policy says the next year you need to restore it. And my only way to restore it, I would think, would be to raise property taxes or come up with another revenue of some sort. So that's just my caution with that 8%. That's all.
I don't think, I mean, this fund balance is not in place to put it, the taxpayers at a disadvantage, but for to better cushion a county that has a pretty volatile income stream in a better position. So the point is to ensure that we have a stronger baseline given where we draw our revenues from. And so you're right, we haven't gone under 6. I'm not sure. And in fact, I think we've been over 8 for most of the period. I believe that there's been some analysis that is going to be done by the comptroller. And I know she was looking at some of the historical stuff through the chair to the comptroller.
Yeah, we have put together a little report. I'm just double, triple checking those numbers now. And it's sort of a historic review, but it does not look like we've been down that low. And I think, obviously I'll send it to the commissioner so he can take a look before I send it over to you guys. But it's really been a range, as far as I can see, from about 11% to as much as 19%. So. Bart, I'm happy to share that with you to take a peek at it before it goes out.
Yeah, I'd like to, Bert, could Bert respond to that, Chairman?
Yes.
Chairman?
Bert, go ahead.
2011, we were under 6%. In terms of our unassigned fund balance to in the general fund, we were 5.94%.
And we had recommendations from our own CMA that, you know, we have to work on the fund balance. And this was an effort to try and shore that up a little bit. I thought the last conversation you were at, Bert, last meeting, that 8 seemed reasonable to you at that point.
Yeah, Legislator Archer, I'm just bringing the caution to the legislative body where, you know, 8%. Yes, it's been our average over the last years, but we've had years that have dipped below that. We had 3 consecutive years, 2009, 10, and 11, where we were under 6%.
But more recent years, and including last year, which was a big question mark, and the concern that we were going to be significantly below, and we ended up with a surplus. So I think that this really is an effort to tighten up our policy and ensure that we're looking at it, given the volatility of our of our economics here. I mean, we're based on tourism, and you know that does present, and the pandemic has shown, it does present some volatility in our market. And so I think it's important for us to shore this up and not at the expense of having to increase taxes either.
Gary Donaldson.
Well, if you raise the minimum for the fund balance, then you are facing the reality that you may have to raise taxes in order to meet. That's reality. And what is the fund balance at this point, and what is the percentage, Bert?
At the end of 2020, and keep in mind it is unaudited, we're at 13.4% unassigned fund balance.
And what is the number?
It is $39.2 million.
Okay, now when you do the, since we also have a...
And this is strictly general fund, by the way, just general fund.
And you said that's 15%, Bert?
13.4%.
And then, I came up with 15, so I guess it was...
You have to compare it to, because this is 12/31/2020, so you have to compare it to your next year's adopted general fund budget.
Deputy Zeg Milgram?
No.
If I may, just for a moment, just to put into context, while we do have a surplus, I'd like everyone to recall how we got there. It wasn't just magic at the end of the year with the sales tax receipts. We zeroed out quite a few positions after a fairly extraordinary early retirement incentive. So there's quite a potential that the number could be vastly different right now, locking our hands into a future policy that will dictate tax hikes. Things should be taken with a lot of caution, especially with the legislature which has the ability to determine ultimately during the budget season what the fund balance level should be in the budget process. So,
Ms. Lady Archer?
Yes, and not to negate all the hard work last year, that was not the intent. I know that there were a number of things put on hold, but I still believe that, increasing our bottom line from 5 to 8% is not going to create a burden. And I guess my next point, and this is the next topic we'll have, is that's the whole point of a tax stabilization, is to have a cushion to protect taxpayers from potential increases.
Other discussion, Chair Donaldson?
I know it was, as you pointed out, in 9, 10, and 11, we faced an economic downturn that went from the, and emanated out of 2008, and it affected our bottom line for 3 years in a row. And in fact, you don't know when those things are going to happen. I mean, I'm concerned with forcing us to have a higher fund balance could put us into a situation where, we would have to raise taxes. I support the idea of the tax stabilization, replenishing that, because that does give us another cushion, like a fund balance in a way. But I don't know if I want to go to the 8%.
All right, legislator Bronk and Archer.
Thanks. I mean, I tend to agree on not so much, I tend to agree with Dave on not so much raising the low end. I'm more comfortable raising the high end. Again, in times like, 9, 10, 11, when I was, early on the legislature, there were a lot of really tough decisions, including layoffs and cuts to services and whatnot that we had to do in order to keep the budget balanced and not have to overly raise taxes. Can everyone still hear me? Everything's frozen. Okay.
We hear you.
Good, long as you can hear me. You know, I would hate to have to further have layoffs or further cut services in order to re-raise the fund balance to an arbitrary number. I understand the goal. I just think in practice it's going to force us at some point in the future, it could force us to make some what I think are really poor decisions. You know, I don't think that we do layoffs or raise taxes in order to keep our savings account higher. I think that's just poor management.
Just like Archer.
Before we potentially finalize this, I'm hoping we can postpone this till next week, and I'm making the proposal to postpone it until we get the analysis from the comptroller's office, because I think that may shed some light on this. You know, we never targeted fund balance to be high. It's not currently, you know, we still are challenged by having it be a balanced budget. And I think that we should look at this seriously as we're coming out of what we learned in the pandemic. And as we move forward, I think we should really take a very close look at it. And I'm hoping that the analysis that the comptroller is preparing will enlighten us as we look at what that bottom number should be. So if folks are okay with that, I would propose we postpone it till we get that report.
I'll second them.
Second. Discussion, Legislator Bartels and Walter.
Well, it's partially, I guess it could be on the postponement, which I'll be supportive of. I wanted to confirm that our budget analysts looked at these numbers and they were comfortable. And I guess this is through the chair to Legislator Archer, that they were comfortable with this range that is proposed?
Yes, I believe we confirmed last meeting that it was shared with also Drescher and Malecki, and they were comfortable with this. So I think the final piece will be what the historical perspectives have looked like over the years, which is what the comptroller is putting together.
And also, if I could just point out again that it's the GFOA, which the resolution states, but it's the GFOA recommendation as well, and these numbers fall within that recommendation as well. But I look forward to the contribution.
Actually, they're a little shy of, at the 16% at the high end, it's a little shy of GFOA. So
at the high end, it's shy of GFOA?
Yes.
Well, then I think we should seriously consider the compromise between legislators Ronk and Archer, even though I recognize Legislator Ronk that you haven't yet agreed to the compromise, but that compromise number on the low end be seriously considered if the high end is shy of GFOA recommendations.
All right.
Again, you know, may I, since we're talking on the resolution, not necessarily on the postponement, you know, just to respond to Legislator Bartels, I would be more comfortable with raising the high end to the GFOA guideline than raising the low end. That's the high end is not my concern. The low end is my concern, because the low end is where we could potentially be overtaxing the taxpayers.
Legislator Walter, did you still want to speak?
Yep. So through the chair to the comptroller, that when I look at the CMA report and it talks about our comparison to other mid-Hudson counties and saying that ours is low and their recommendations were very strongly stated that the need, is it possible that you can also provide that perspective of what some other counties are providing in terms of the right comparing apples to apples? Thank you.
Yeah, we can pull that for you. We'll try to get our numbers to Bert as soon as possible so that we can get it to you guys, and then I'll find out what other counties have as their policies. I have a few in my files, yes.
Legislator Ronk and then Bartels.
Thanks. Just to Legislator Walter's point about surrounding counties, I think that that's a poor comparison. When we compare ourselves to other counties, it's better to compare ourselves to similarly sized counties or similarly geographically set up counties. One of the favorite things of organizations like fire departments and whatnot and towns and every other organization, even some of our town's labor unions. They love to compare Ulster County and our contracts for employment and all kinds of other things to Orange County. And I'll tell you the same thing I told the fire advisory board when they wanted to build a new fire training center, is that Orange County has a lot of things that we don't have, like Woodbury Commons, which generates more sales tax revenue each year than Ulster County. I will say this, that when going out for labor negotiations, the town of Shongum, the town that I represent, the unions and the arbitrators come in with the town of Crawford as a comparable. It's roughly the same size and geographic nature of the town of Shongum, but the town of Crawford gets over $2 million a year in sales tax sharing from the county, and the town of Shongum receives a little over 200,000. So it's a 10-to-1 multiplier on what they get in sales tax than what we get in our, and that's just one town to town that borders and is similarly situated. So again, when we're talking about using different counties as like a bellwether for whether or not we have enough fund balance or not, we should probably be looking at not necessarily surrounding counties, but similarly situated counties.
May I respond to that?
Well, hold on. Let's say Bartels first, but we already have a motion a second to postpone anyway, so let's try to wrap it up if we can, because we're going to probably rehash this next week anyway. So Legislative Bartels, go ahead.
I'm okay with letting legislative okay.
Thanks. I'll be brief. That this is why it's important to do percentage as opposed to raw N. It's because we're talking about percentage, so it makes less of an impact that some counties are bigger or smaller because we're talking about percentage. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And my response, my comment is to an earlier point that Legislator Ronk made regarding the GFOA recommendations. The GFOA recommendations they don't recognize a range, they recognize a minimum. And so if our maximum is not meeting what they recognize as a minimum, that's my concern. And that's why I think we should seriously consider the compromised minimum.
All right, thank you. All right, all those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
So carried. Resolution 239, replenishing the tax stabilization fund. Can I motion? Chair Donaldson.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Discussion? Legislator Archer? Legislator Archer, discussion? I think Archer.
It was broken up, so I didn't hear saying.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're freezing up sometimes. I don't know if you had a discussion or not.
No, I didn't have a question.
Here.
We voted on.
Here, Donaldson.
Yeah, I was asking. This is coming out of the fund balance rather than the American Rescue Funds. Is that correct? Wouldn't it? I mean, since the money was used for COVID, should it come out of the American Rescue Funds? Or maybe I can get a response from the finance director.
We could make a case to do that, Dave. There are limitations as to what we can use, but I believe we can make the case to redo it from the American Rescue Funds, yes.
That's it, Rock.
Thanks. Following up on Dave's point, I don't support the resolution as written. I don't think it's wise in the middle of a budget to take monies that are in a unrestricted fund balance and put them into a hyper restricted fund balance. I'm not opposed per se to replenishing the fund, but I think it should happen during budget time, the same time that the money that was used from the fund. I don't agree with taking unrestricted funds and making them restricted in the middle of the year.
Mr. Archer.
Well, we weren't anticipating a surplus either, and we have a surplus, and the whole reason we used it was there was an anticipation that we were going to have a huge deficit, which did not materialize, and so we were able to put the additional money in the general fund, and to me it makes sense to move, at least cover what we took out in this tax stabilization fund. So we're protecting the taxpayers from any future potential of an increase. We used it for what we thought was an emergency because of the pandemic. It didn't materialize. We ended up with an $11 million surplus. So to just replenish tax stabilization and keep that piece whole, I think is reasonable on behalf of the taxpayers.
Donaldson, then Rock.
Yeah, well, the problem is, I know we have a fund balance, but we don't know what we're going to be facing in the coming months. We don't really know, with the coming up with the eviction notice is going to be changing. There's going to be things in that nature that it may affect us in a way that we may need to spend some money to protect people. And I'm looking at that at this very moment, and I've been discussing that with some people in reference to the, the various foreclosures, the various eviction notices that will be showing up in come September. And we may need to, put things, money aside out of the budget that we are, the fund balance that we're using right now. And I also, in other words, I kind of agree with Ken that, I do believe that this should be, refunded, but I don't believe it should be done at this point. I believe it should be done really with American Rescue money, because that's what the money was used for. So therefore we can replenish that with the money that we have coming in, rather than taking a chance and using money that is in the middle of a budget that we have no idea what may be coming up in the not too distant future. And I give you one example just before. So,
Rob?
Thanks. Due respect to Legislator Archer's point, I to be technical, the reason that we used the funds were because they were an unanticipated cost and not because we were expecting that, it was going to be more of an emergency this year, or it was an emergency situation, because I don't believe that those qualified. What qualified were unanticipated costs, which, these obviously were. I understand that part of the reason that we use these for the unexpected cost was, because of the expectation of, a loss of revenue or whatnot, which we did see. We just didn't see as big of a loss of revenue as was expected. The one other thing that I'll say is that perhaps the best way to protect the taxpayers overall is to not use this money to replenish it, because there are so few expenditures that the tax stabilization fund can be used for, that we're actually protecting the taxpayers by keeping it in an unassigned fund balance. If something, catastrophic comes up, we could use it from that rather than having it stuck in an account that we can't use if the expenditures don't qualify.
Controller Gallagher?
I wanted to note that sales tax this year coming in is substantially higher than last year, as well as 2019 for the same period. So we're 26.73% ahead of last year. I anticipate that you will exceed your sales tax, your budgeted sales tax revenues this year.
I'll say, Walter.
Thanks. Through the chair, back to the comptroller, just your thoughts on this resolution.
I like the taxpayer stabilization fund. I personally want to see it replenished, but I will tell you there's a split in judgment here in this office. We're not in consensus. And because of its restrictive nature, there is some thought that keeping it as unassigned is more helpful. I think it's a time that we're flush and that we should invest in this particular opportunity to protect taxpayers in the future. That's my opinion. And I think also when we went into using the fund, many of us and many of the taxpayers that I talked to anticipated that it would be refunded when possible, and it is possible now.
Legislative Bartels, then Deputy Executive Milburn.
I didn't have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Deputy Milburn? You're on mute.
Yeah, I have to give a full disclosure. I voted against this, but it was created, just so you know.
Just to reiterate, the flushness we're in right now, aside from the retirements, there were significant cost savings just from the services that weren't being delivered. I mean, our bus system was brought to a standstill. We spent nothing, well, not nothing, but a significant reduction last year in fuel across the county. Those expenses will be coming back. Surpluses quickly turned to deficits. And I do advise that we get a full picture in the budget process or, you know, a little bit in the future before we start committing funds to essentially a locked box. So,
Leslie Archer.
I think it goes to without saying then that, you know, leaving it unrestricted means that it will not be used or could not be used potentially down the road for tax stabilization. And that was the intent here, to protect the taxpayers. So by replenishing it, we do secure that we are protecting the future of a potential increase with this money. So while we have it, while we have the surplus, I think that well spent in the future. And it goes back to conversations we've been trying to have, which is better long-term planning, which would be extremely helpful as we go forward. We have these conversations and they're hurried at the budgetary time. We don't spend anywhere near the amount of time we should be spending on long-term where.
We lost you, Leslie Archer. Deputy Zayden Milgram.
If I may, I just want to be clear that I'm not saying the executive's office is against replenishing the taxpayer stabilization fund. It's, again, it goes to planning and doing a one-off spending item now without getting a fuller picture of what the spending is going to look like for next year, I think is a move that's a bit rash and it's a one-off. So that's all. Thank you.
All right, any other discussion? Leslie Walter.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about us moving on this if Legislator Archer is frozen. So, yeah.
Legislator Cahill.
Thank you. I appreciate you letting me have a comment, even though I'm not on this committee. So I just read the resolution, and it clearly states that the money for that fund was to be used specifically for COVID and that any expenditure would be given to the Ways and Means Committee after it was allocated. I was wondering if that ever happened, and did you actually use it for COVID-related expenses? Because I'm of the mind that when this first came about, I recall the discussion being that if we don't use it, we'll replace it, right? That was one of the things. Oh, yeah, of course, if we don't use it, we'll replace it, right? Well, we didn't use it, right? Or if we did use it, we didn't have to use it. We have the ability to restore that money. And so, you know, I'm of the mind that says, you know, if we knew that we were going to have that money now, we would have never went in there, right? But we didn't know that. But we do have the money now. So I think that we should either use the government, the federal money, or the surplus, one of the two, and put that money back in there. It's in there and it's difficult to use for a reason, right? And that's why it took us 3 months to pass it the last time. And I believe that we should put it back in there, because who knows what's going to happen. We got lucky this year. We got very, very lucky. And the fact that our revenue is going to be up, you know, 30% is a miracle in my mind, right? And, you know, we don't know what next year is going to bring or 2 years down the road. And if we do, in fact, at some point need to dip into this fund to stabilize the tax increase, that's what I think we should do. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Legislator Rock.
Thanks. I do believe that this was used for COVID-related expenses. There was a specific set of COVID-related expenses, which partially included the purchase of proper PPE for all of our emergency first responders, law enforcement, et cetera. You know, just because we had the surplus that's been discussed doesn't mean that we didn't need to use this, because, you know, it was used for a very specific purpose. And I understand it's tough to use, but I'm not even worried about the process and the fact that we need 2/3 of the legislature and things like that. excuse me, there are so few things that we can use it for that, you know, even if we came to a scenario where, you know, we were going to have a tax increase, we might not be able to use that unless we've exhausted all the other options that we have to not raise taxes. If I'm correct, the finance commissioner can correct me if I'm wrong on that. So I understand. I'm not necessarily opposed to using the American Rescue Funds for this. I'm 100% opposed to taking, you know, undesignated fund balance and turn it into a restricted fund balance. I just don't think that that's, I don't think that that's a proper way for us to serve the taxpayers. I'm open to the fact that other people may disagree with me, but I just, that's the way I feel.
Leslie Archer, do you want anything else to say, or?
I don't know where we left off or what's been said since. So I'm a little at a disadvantage. I don't know if I got cut off.
You were almost ready to call the question, and then legislator, I believe, Walter had brought up that it would be bad form to vote on the question without you being able to be unfrozen.
Well, I appreciate that.
Nobody else then? All those in favor?
I'll call the question.
All those in favor? Opposed? Looks like, hard to see everybody. Looks like it's defeated. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I don't know if legislator Parody voted.
I can't see Parody.
I did. I voted yes. Listened to the debate. It's very interesting. A lot of what-if scenarios. It's not conclusive, really, in my mind, and very conflicting. But I have no problem voting yes to move it forward to the next level.
Okay, so then it passes 5-4. Thank you. Resolution 245, setting a public hearing for tentative budget, Bells County Community College. The motion?
I move it.
Donaldson, second. Bartels, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 249, amending 2021 budget to fund environmental compliance management position as amended.
Movement.
Second. Mark. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 250, authorizing chair of legislature to execute an MOA with Kingston City School District for operation of a point of dispensing site. Motion.
Mayor
Donaldson, second. Bartels, discussion. All those in favor?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I just wanted to understand, is this now we're going back to Kingston in place of Best Buy? Is that correct?
No, this this is a contract that's looking backwards. We initially, Kingston High School or the Kingston City School District was going to submit their own FEMA reimbursement for IS assistance, janitorial, they cleaned every night, and a few other. They also provided security for us. Mm-hmm. The FEMA rep said that because it's our county health department pod, we have to submit to FEMA for reimbursement. So in order to get the school district reimbursed for their expenses, we have to put together this MOU, and then we'll seek FEMA reimbursement.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Okay. 251, authorizing chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with New York State
Office. I'm moving.
Second. Wait a second. Unless you're wrong. All those in the discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 252, approved next use to the contract for 73,000. I'm moving. Second. Let's say Walter, on discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 253, approved next user contract for 200,000.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 254, approving the executioner contract for 200,000 with unlimited care.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 255.
I'll move it.
Second. Johnson.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 256.
I'll move it.
Second.
I lost my place on the fly. I apologize. 255 or 256?
256.
256. Thanks. Chair Donaldson's motion, second wrong. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 257.
I'll move it.
Second.
Johnson. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 258. Supporting the findings and recommendations of the 2020 final report.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
I have some discussion if I could, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support this moving to the floor. My vote next week may not be reflective of my vote tonight. Whether or not I agree with everything in the 2040 working group plan, I don't know if I fully agree with why the legislature is weighing in on this, because we don't have to. I respect where everyone's coming from. I don't know that I see the same utility. We don't need to relitigate it now, because I just have to do some soul searching for myself, and I'll probably be the only one to vote no if I vote no. But I have concern about when we start weighing in and having supporting resolutions of things that we don't need to.
Bartels.
Thank you. I'm going to support this as well. I reread the report. And I'm going to probably echo some of what Legislator Ronk said. While I may not agree with every aspect, I applaud the work. I'm not so sure that we need to weigh in either. And some of the language in terms of directing the executive resources or encouraging the direction of the executive resources concerns me. I think that most of my concerns, and I'm going to do some soul searching too, have more to do, and we'll talk about it in the next resolution, with the interface with USEDA and really understanding that delineation. I do not feel that's been properly laid out to the legislature, not through this report or through the Office of Economic Development. And I think it's somewhere where we can do more work, whether it's through a presentation on this report as part of a larger picture of economic development in Ulster County, or if it's just a discussion on that interface, which, again, I know I'm kind of flowing over into the next resolution, but I am going to support this resolution, but I also have some hesitation.
Anybody else discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Okay. 259, approved exclusive contract for $75,000
a year. I'll move it.
Motion second.
Second it.
Discussion on this? Legislator Bartels.
So this, I know that this is not 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but today I looked back and tried to find something in the, in the enabling legislation of USEDA and in later documents that would provide a clearer picture for me on what USEDA is and is meant to do in relation to what now the Department of Economic Development is and is meant to do. And I realize I was there and I played a role in advocating for the creation of a Department of Economic Development. And when I read the Schedule A in this, and the scope of services in this resolution, many of the things that are laid out are things that I thought that the Department of Economic Development would or should be doing. So again, I struggle with contracting for services that to me are things that our own Department of Economic Development should be doing. And it may be that I can get to a place where I understand that, but I don't currently.
Let's say Walter.
Yeah, is Tim still on the call? Can he speak to that? Here.
Sorry, Legislator Walter, you were asking if I can respond to that?
Yes.
So I can. I think that this is a topic that warrants, you know, ongoing discussion. This is about designing our economic development system here in Ulster County, and it's something that I think we've struggled with for as long as I've been paying attention, for at least a decade or two. And I think that it's also worth pointing out that the situation and conditions continue to evolve in the world. And so the Ulster 2040 report was designed to try to take a snapshot of where we are and to, at the highest level, align our work. The simplest way, I think we talked about this in the Economic Development Committee meeting, to describe what we're trying to do with UCEDA, what its purpose is the part of our toolbox that's really flexible in implementing our strategic direction is determined by this body and the legislature in consultation with the executive and with input from businesses and community leaders, which really, I think, is why we set up and wanted to have your input and approval on the Ulster 2040 plan. And as we talked about in the last Economic Development Committee meeting, see that as a living document too, and would like to continue to engage with you on it. But, you know, I think that the reality here is that we need to have a toolbox of economic development tools that responds to all of the various challenges that it takes to build a healthier, more resilient economy. And we know that there's a role for an organization like the IDA in certain ways. There's a role for an organization like the EDA in other ways, which is to be nimble, to be able to enter into the kinds of projects and initiatives that are a response to our discussions together with the legislature about strategic direction for economic development. And that's what I think we've got in this scope of work. It's stuff that, quite frankly, I would love to do with the kind of day-to-day operations of our county department. And I think we try to get as much of that done as we can, but having the flexibility of an organization that can enter into contract with folks, that can have, you know, volunteers even and raise funds from other sources, gives us more opportunity to pursue those items.
Ms. Lee-Archer.
Yeah, and I said this in economic development, so there's going to be no surprises here. I have been asking for a clear delineation of roles and responsibility, who does what with regards to the IDA, with regards to UCEDA, with regards to economic development. And we have this conversation every time money gets put on the table, and yet the conversation really doesn't happen. And so I was a no on this. I will be a no on this tonight. Again, you know, we have transferred one of our greatest assets, which is the Enterprise West. And we have not flushed out. We've got a document that a lot of local business folks had input in. And I think it's valuable, but it still was happening at the time of the pandemic without really understanding where we're coming out on this. There are so many unknowns, and I'm not suggesting we stop. We need to evolve. But to me, that should be at the front and center of the Office of Economic Development. And again, to speak to, and I said this at the meeting as well, you look at Schedule A, to me, that's the job description for the Office of Economic Development. Why we're transferring it now to UCEDA along with taxpayer money makes me scratch my head, because we still haven't sat down and sorted out all of these opportunities, and to your point, the tools that are available to us to advance economic development in this county.
Chair Donaldson.
Well, we're talking about this thing. I've been here for a little bit of a time, shall we say. I'm closing in on finishing three decades almost on the legislative body, and economic development has always been a something that's in flux all the time. From the Ulster County Development Corporation that we dealt with at one point, that would have been heavily employees, and then it also had business people on it. And from today, now we created an Office of Economic Development. UCEDA is not that, and nor should they be that. And I believe that this is exactly what UCEDA should be doing. Because it creates the flexibility. The flexibility is not in the Office of Economic Development. That's a more of an outreach to get people in. UCEDA is much more of something that is there for to be able to, as you pointed out, leverage money from other places, to work a deal to get somebody to come here. That's something that the Office of Economic Development cannot do. They do not have that kind of flexibility because they are basically a government agency. This sort of works hand in hand with that. So to me, this is exactly what it should be doing. We made the changes, or they're making the changes to USITA, so they're not all employees, that they're actually people from the business world that's being involved in this. And to me, I believe that for the first time that I've seen in quite some time, that it looks like we're actually beginning to develop an economic development structure that is working better than it has in the past. And not that it's where it should be yet, but hopefully it's getting there. And it seems we have people that are willing to work with the legislative body, as well as working with the, you know, the department. So I will support this, and hopefully it's the right thing to do. It seems like it is to me.
All right, Deputy Executive Ryder, then Walter, and then Legislator Archer.
I want to respond to the fact that the Schedule A scope of services seems to align with things that the Economic Development Department should do. We just passed five pieces of legislation, contracts through DSS. If you were to look at those scope of services, it would look like those scope of services are things that the Department of Social Services should be providing. And that's because it is. I mean, I would say that if there was any scope of services in that a department had a contract for that weren't in its mission, that there would be an issue with that. And sometimes there's other agencies, the LDC, USITA in this instance, can provide other services that our department can't. And it's just another tool in the toolbox for economic development to use.
I say, Walter.
Thank you. Actually, so that my point was kind of supported even more by what was just said. You know, if services are being passed on, then I would assume that you wouldn't see the costs in the DSS budget specifically, unless it's a pass through. You know, its operating costs should be lower. If it's not providing the service, it's hiring another organization to provide the services. So I guess what I wonder, and by way of the chair to either Mark or Tim, is will we expect to see in the 2020, in the next budget, the economic development department's costs to be lower? Like, will they have a lower budget because several of these tasks will be handed to USITA?
So I'll take that first, Mark, but I think, you know, the point Mark made, I think, is worth reiterating, and I think it addresses that question, Legislator Walter. These are things that we, as outlined in the Ulster 2040 report that this committee just advanced, feel are important to do on our economic development work. They take resources to do, and we are asking the legislature to allow us to take allocated resources for the Department of Economic Development and fund that work to be done through a partner organization. That, you know, I think is the same thing as what Mark was just describing, and basically what you'd be suggesting would be saying that just because DSS needs services from a third party, that somehow that means we can reduce that out of the budget next year. So my simple answer is no. This is a reflection of the scope of work that we feel needs to be done in economic development and the best way to do it.
Deputy Ryder.
If I could just add on to that, you'll remember, Legislator Walter, you and Legislator Criswell actually went back into the 2021 budget and added operating funds for the Department of Social Services for four contracts that were provided to other agencies to provide similar services. They were in the operating budget of DSS. It's not outside of all of these contracts for these departments live within the operating funds of these departments. In fact, the contract that is in front of you right now was budgeted for in 2021. So it's part of the operating budget of the Department of Economic Development.
Ms. Archer?
At the time of the budget, it was never identified that money was to be specifically transferred to USITA, and that's what it was for. It was articulated that it was for the various analysis, et cetera, that's in Scope A. So it was never, but it was never identified as a line item of money being transferred to USITA. Again, I feel like we just haven't had sufficient conversation to sort through all of these things as it pertains to economic development. And I hear what your argument is. It's paying for services. Who is going to do the services in USITA? You have, you know, we've now taken some of the resources out. So are they going to hire an executive director? Are they going to hire staff to do some of these things? So what are they going to do instead of having county employees sitting in USITA doing this work anyway? So it's not clear to me the delineation of roles and responsibilities. And this has always been the bone of contention about money going from taxpayer money coming from the county into USITA, at which point there is an oversight. So it's just a question that has not been answered to my satisfaction.
Chair Donaldson, then Bartels, then Lou. Let's say you should know.
Well, when we put money in the budget for these things, we were not exactly sure where and how it would be spent at that point. But the point was that we were putting money in the budget for anticipation. And what we're doing right now is, to me, this is exactly what you see this supposed to be doing. And what you want to hamstring them, then not do it, I guess. I mean, we could ask questions at the very end, and to the point what is as Bill Clinton once pointed out. I mean, the thing is that we need to deal with economic development, and we need to have some flexibility. And there's not a great deal of money that we're putting into this at this point. And so, I mean, I'd like to call the question.
I like.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I was going to raise the question that Legislator Archer raised, and that's to try to understand who exactly is going to provide these services. I mean, they're pretty expansive services for $75,000, including investing in tailored real estate and infrastructure, but knowing that, you know, we've just changed some of the board members, which I'm happy about, that, you know, we're following the legislature's request and the previous comptroller's report, which, you know, noticed the conflicts with so many members of the executive staff on the board. I just want to understand again, so who is going to, is USITA going to take the $75,000 and contract out to someone else, or are USITA employees going to facilitate all these things that are under the services, including what I mentioned, investing in tailored real estate and holding these meetings? And I mean, it's an expansive list.
So if I might, I think part of what is envisioned here, there are no staff at USITA, as you know. The administrative capacity is provided through the agreement that we have for county staff to provide that support. The tool itself allows for, one, the flexibility to enter into contracts with other agencies to provide some of these services, and two, to seek out funds from other sources to help augment what is kind of a seed investment in the organization with these funds that allows us to pursue these projects and initiatives. So allows us to bring other resources to bear in order to do this work.
Chris Lady Uchita.
Yeah, I just wanted to just kind of highlight that, like, we have, I think some of us are hungry for that conversation, to Legislator Archer's point about the economic development tools of the county. But we have, it's not as though the current state of this particular tool is not the product of hard-fought arguments. We have two seats on the legislative, you know, that are legislative, de facto legislative seats from the Economic Development Committee, you know, and because of the way we structure our committees right now or you know, place legislators, they're bipartisan in the seats. So, you know, we have representation there. I don't think, with that in mind, I don't think it's appropriate for us at this level to
ask for such a deep level of specificity that it would almost, you know, preempt the oversight from that entity, right? That entity, despite having a relationship with the Economic Development Office, it's obviously a very close relationship, is intended to be an entity that brings in the oversight from private industry, that also brings in oversight from the legislative branch, and that's where that oversight is supposed to happen. You know, we're appropriating here, and you know, I would just, you know, urge us all to consider that we have fought some of these battles. We should explore them more because we need to have them in the fuller context of the IDA and some of the other economic development tools that are, you know, at play in the county. But it's not as though this is getting out ahead of, you know, having never had the structural conversation. We have had those conversations, and this appropriation, you know, task that we have that's before Ways and Means tonight, I think we should be mindful of the swim lanes on this.
Right, unless there's something, Mr. Perry.
Yeah, if I just might. You know, the last 30 or 40 years I've been involved in things around Ulster County, there's basically been no economic development except the building of a jail. And we're going to be paying for that monstrosity for the next 20 years. Now, this idea seems to be kind of a little imaginative, a little flexible. The what if questions, the what should we do questions, they can go on ad infinitum, but nothing's forever. If it doesn't work, somebody else can change it. But I think right now, there's not a day goes by anywhere in this county where anybody can be satisfied with the economic development up until now.
Thank you. All right. If there's nothing new, then just a call for a vote. All those in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 260, authorizing chair legislature to secure this intermunicipal agreement with the town of New Paltz for public transport. The motion?
Move it.
Second. Did I say it wrong? Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 261, approving the execution of a contract for $48,000.
Move it.
Second. Legislative Bartels. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? 262, approving the execution of the contract.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Second, wrong. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 263, approving the execution of the contract.
I'll move it.
Second. Bartels, discussion. In favor? Opposed? So carried. 263, authorizing chair of the legislature and student's agreement.
I'll move it.
Chair Donaldson, second by Bartels. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 265. Approve the execution of the contract.
I'll move that.
Second. Wait a second. Second Bartels. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 266. Approve the execution of the contract.
I'll move that.
Second. So the Bartels. Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 267, authorizing chair to a term.
I move that.
Second. Let's say it wrong. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. 268, establishing capital project 594.
I move that.
Second, by Walter. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 270, approving a future contract.
I'll move it.
Seconded.
Second Chair Donaldson, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 271, approving a future contract.
I'll move that.
Second. Prompt. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Aye. 272, mending 20.
I'll move that.
Second.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in, let's say it wrong.
Thanks. You know, I'm going to be voting no on this tonight. I respect the need for more staff at the district attorney's office. It's actually something that I respect since, you know, long before Mr. Clegg became our district attorney. Every single year,
our former district attorney Holly Carnwright would come to the legislature during budget time when things like this are supposed to be discussed, and ask for more staff, ask for better wages for his ADAs, and every year he was turned away, except for one year when some salary increases were given to some of his ADAs. This year in the budget, we increased the staff of the district attorney's office, which I did not support. And now we are here in June, and we're about to add $500,000 to the district attorney's office in costs that are going to continue for years to come. I could support this resolution if it had a sunset when the grant money runs out. Then we will have another discussion about this. I understand that it's great to use shiny grant money, but when this is going to turn into, you know, 0.75% on our property tax levy, I think that we need to have a much longer discussion about the future costs of this particular issue. Also, I just want to bring up that back in 2019, I believe it was, the Republican caucus in the legislature sponsored a memorializing resolution opposed to the bail reform and discovery reform because, among other things, it was going to increase costs. And here we are 2 years later, and we're looking at dropping $500,000 into just one office's compliance with the discovery reform. So for those reasons, I'll be voting no tonight unless we put a sunset in.
Let's say Walter, then Chair Donaldson.
Thank you. For probably the same reasons as why I'm voting yes for this, I have been, as Chair of Law Enforcement Public Safety, hearing the need, the desperate need that the District Attorney's Office has had all this time. To me, the very idea that our District Attorney's been asking for this for years and years and years and has been turned down does not endorse saying no again. It endorses saying yes, as far as I'm concerned. I feel compelled to the public safety piece of this, that this is really, you know, has the potential of being highly detrimental to public safety. I think it's already just on the precipice of that. I've also spoken to law enforcement, and they are desperate for not only the revenue that will be coming down from BCJS, but the continued support, the IT support. You know, I had to look up what a terabyte was, and the idea that 13 terabytes since, I don't remember what it was, maybe January, you know, that's the equivalent of what I figured, like 85 million pages. I mean, the it's an intense amount, and I know law enforcement is asking for this support, probation, as well as the DA, that this is something that creates a much better system. I think it's just a cherry that the DCJS came up with that money to help cover in the back, you know, the back costs. We didn't expect to have that, and they are giving us that revenue. I would support this even if there was no grants. This is something that's clearly needed, desperately needed, and for us to postpone this any further in supporting this department, I think is problematic. And I think that that's probably why law enforcement public safety was unanimously supportive of this.
Chair Donaldson.
Yeah, when you talk about coming before us in the past, with all due respect, but Leader Ronke, you opposed those in the past. I supported those changes then, and because I felt that they were needed then, and I knew very well that even when the prior DA, Harley Conroy, was there, I respected his need, and I voted for his needs. And in fact, I think it was Joe Maloney and I sponsored the resolution to increase some salary for some of the ADAs. And right now, I find the salary for the ADAs, I find it absurd, what we pay them. These people are doing yeoman's work, and we don't want to pay them for that. That's for sure, because it doesn't show up in that manner. And at this point, it has become more of a crisis and more of a safety issue than what it was before, and because of the new discoveries. So I'm in full support of this, and the safety reasons if that's the only thing, I'll do it for that. But I really think we need to look at the DA's office and the pay scales that are there for the work that they do and for the degrees they have to have in order to do it. If you take a look at, in some cases, starting teachers make more than an ADA. So, I mean, I'm looking at and nothing against teachers. I taught for almost 30 years, and my daughter's a teacher at KHS. So, the point is I support this full-heartedly, and I think we should call the vote.
Legislator Ron, if you don't mind, let me just go to Legislator Haynes first, and then we'll go back to you, Legislator Haynes.
I have to say that I'm really not happy having to take this vote. I think that we have not even fully realized the impact of both bail and discovery reform. This is yet another unfunded mandate that's passed down to the state, but I will be voting in favor of this because of the compelling statements from the DA's office and the need to have additional staff to make sure that our communities are safe. And like I said, you know, here again, this is just the beginning of what we're going to see come out of this. You know, quite honestly, were there some reforms that needed to take place? Yes, but this is one of the ones that, you know, we haven't even fully realized it yet. And so like with that being said, and due to public safety, I'm going to be voting in favor of this.
Okay. Let's say Rob. You're on mute.
Thanks. Sorry about that. Eventually, I'll get the hang of it. You know, I
going back in person will be too late.
What's that?
We're back in person next week, so it's too late.
Well, I'm very happy about that, Mr. Chairman. But we're still going to be on Zoom for some of these committee meetings, so I still have a little bit of time. And with all due respect to what my colleagues have said, after I spoke the first time, I understand the need at the DA's office. And I also believe that as we move forward, we're going to be seeing resolutions for extra staff or monies to comply with discovery reform from the sheriff's department and from the public defender's office and from probation. And it goes on and on and on. And one of my problems is here we're solving the problem in front of us and not looking at the holistic picture. So if we have a data problem at the county, we talk about, I think the slide was 13 terabytes. Is that, is that roughly accurate of information? That's information that the DA's office is going to need. It's also information the public defender's office could need. It's also information that is maintained by the sheriff's department and probation. So is this person in the records management office of the DA's office going to be working with the sheriff's department and probation and the public defender's office? Or are we going to need a records management person for each of those offices? I mean, these are questions maybe they've been answered and I just haven't been at the meetings, but I have concern about this $500,000, tripling or quadrupling, over time as we try and handle bail reform. And with respect to the caseloads, I understand the caseloads right now are extremely high. But until we get past this COVID bubble where everything was shut down and then everything opened back up again, I'm not sure that we can say that the caseloads are going to be, as high now, as high in 6 months and 12 months and 18 months as they are right now. Which is, again, why I don't think that we make snap decisions in the middle of a budget year to add $500,000 annually to one department. That's why these conversations happen at budget time and not in June. I'll stop there.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Legislator Walker.
Thank you. I will reiterate that these conversations did start in budget time, but unfortunately, because of COVID and hiring freezes, we were really limited in our capacity. We didn't know that we'd be as okay as we are now. I will also add that this ask is a collaborative effort, including law enforcement, probation, and the sheriff, that the fortunate revenue that we're going to get from the Manhattan DAs will cover the primary costs to the law enforcement, which include software and hardware, which they won't need the repeated, but absolutely this position in the district attorney's office will support all of those departments. But the biggest issue is that the onus of discovery falls solely on the DA. They all are a part of that act, the law enforcement. I mean, less so the public defender's office, who is more the recipient, but it is solely the responsible DA's office to make sure that that information is gathered. If they don't do it successfully, they cannot successfully try somebody who may have done something that's harmful and may continue to do something that's harmful. It lies right on the DA's shoulders. But we had in law enforcement public safety law enforcement present, and they spoke to how important those positions that are in the DA's office is to all of them.
Thank you. Let's say, Ron.
Thanks. Could I ask one question of the DA?
Sure.
You know, when these bills were being, you know, discussed in Albany, you know, did you lodge an opinion on those? I know that our former district attorney, Holly Carnwright, you know, was one of the ones who came to the law enforcement committee at that time and opposed the discovery reform changes, even more than the bail reform changes, the discovery reform changes, because of the costs and onus that it would put on the district attorney's office. I was just curious if at that time you had had a public position on that.
Since I became DA, I went both before the speaker and the head of the Senate in New York State and explained how these bills were unnecessarily broad, that it caused consequential damages that they may not have realized. The points that I made were that, and I've made this before, 80% of the cases over the last 40 years that you deal with in a criminal court are resolved without complete discovery. Mm-hmm. So 20% of the cases required that, and in the old days, you didn't have to serve that until a few days before trial. In the old days, you could show up at arraignment and the DA could say ready for trial and you wouldn't have to worry about speedy trial. All those things have changed, and with the time constraints that we had. So I, along with the sheriff of this county, went up and spoke to both the assembly and the Senate and explained to them the consequences that are occurring to both of our offices from this. And I lobbied, and as part of that lobbying got the second reform on bail reform, which didn't go as far as we requested. I made public the old time, and we're not really talking about bail reform right now, but in my position on bail reform was that we needed an exemption or an exception for public safety issues. So when there was an issue of dangerousness, we should be able to request bail and have a hearing for that and have due process. But yes, I have been in support of the changes of reform, which were needed, but as I said, to both the Assembly and the Senate, these went too far. And there are consequences you didn't see coming. And those consequences now are burdening the office at a level that we need additional help.
Thank you. That's it, Rock.
Thanks. I just want to say that I you know, and I appreciate that, Dave. I really do. You know, I don't necessarily think that the folks who passed these laws didn't see them coming. I can tell you that, you know, from working in the state assembly, I know that the members of the conference that I work for in the state assembly brought up many of these issues at that point. They were just not heeded. But you know, that having been said, you know, it's where we're at. Thanks.
Let's say Perry.
You know, what is, we have to do something pretty evident. What sort of drives me sideways sometimes is a year and a half ago in the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Committee, we wanted to bring in and ask to come in our elected representatives and those involved in law enforcement to talk about this, talk about the effects. Didn't work. And now where are we?
All right. Legislator Rock, let's try to wrap up.
I'll make this my last comment. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
You know, I just heard five of the most dangerous words when put all together in government. We have to do something. Almost nothing good ever comes from the phrase "we have to do something." That's one of my issues with this happening in the middle of a budget year.
Oh, never mind. Never mind. They built a big reservoir up here for New York City. Back in 1885, somebody said, "We have to do something. We need water."
And look how that turned out.
Look at it. Pays good
time. Call the question.
Yeah. You got water. All right.
All those in favor? Opposed? All right. So carried. Need a motion to block 273, 274, and 275.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Block. Yes.
All right. On the block, get a motion.
Aye.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 276, establishing capital project 593. Motion.
I move it.
Second, Legislator Bartels, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. You're opposed, Legislator Rock? No. 278, approving the execution of contract 145.
I'll move it.
Second, Legislator Walter, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 279, approving the execution of a contract amendment.
I'll move it.
Second, Legislator Walter. Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 280, approving the execution contract.
I'm moving.
Second. Legislator Walter, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 283, authorizing the chair of the legislature into an agreement. Second.
Did you skip 281?
I don't have 281.
You do 281 and 282.
I did skip those somehow. 281, approving execution of a contract for 69,072.
I'll move it.
Second. I said, Walter, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carry. 282, approving
execution. I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? 283, authorizing the chair to enter an agreement with Higginsville Station. Motion. Let's move it. Second to Bartels. Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carry. 285, authorizing the issuance pursuant to Section 90.
I'll move that.
Second. I said wrong. Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 286, authorizing distribution of mortgage tax receipts. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Officer Walter, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 287, authorizing the chair of legislature to an agreement with the New York State Department of DCJS.
Move it.
Second, Walter, discussion. Legislator Bartels, you have discussion now. All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 289, establishing the ban in the box. The motion. Legislator Bartels, second Walter, discussion. Legislator Bartels.
Just provide, I mean, it's self-explanatory, but just to provide a little background, as it states in 2014 and into 2015, there was an executive order in Ulster County establishing a ban the box policy. That policy is still being followed today. There's been no change with the new executive, but I thought it important to codify the policy, which would be for county employees, county hires only, and as the policy exists currently.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Oh, Legislator Walker.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I completely support this. I think ban the box has been found to be highly problematic and contributed to racial inequality in many ways. And I think it's an extremely important thing for us to do, is to codify that.
Mr. Perry?
My granddaughter just came to see me. I moved a question.
Yeah. There you go.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Is there any new business? Any old business? Before we adjourn, our next meeting next week is in person. If you have been vaccinated and you're not planning on wearing a mask, please give your vaccination records over to the clerk. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Jack Donaldson, all those in favor? All righty. Thank you all.